This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK10.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take a seat.
Aye, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's newest series about Star Trek's oldest series, the original series. This isn't going to be an episode-by-episode review show, but like Earl Grey, The Orb, To the Journey, and Warp 5, this will be what I call a commuter-length show, where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and I'm the TOS editor for the network. And with me today is Mike from Commentary Track Stars.
How's it going?
It's fantastic. I'm excited to finally get this show started. And I'm excited the opportunities, the things we're going to talk about in the future. But here now, for just episode one, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk a bit. We're going to share our Star Trek stories, why we enjoy TOS, and share a couple of our favorite episodes. So, Mike, I've heard your Star Trek story. I've heard it more times than I care to recount, but I know that there are people who've not heard it, and I think it's cool enough to hear another retelling. So please regale us with your story.
Okay. All right. Well, sorry if you have heard that. I have told it too many times, but I'll tell it one more time. So I guess I got into Star Trek like a lot of people from our generation got into Star Trek, and that's through Star Wars. I was a huge Star Wars fan growing up, and when I was about 12 years old, I decided that it was time to expand my horizons a bit, and I was like, you know what, I should give Star Trek a shot. And on December 25th, 1992, I was over at my Aunt Rita's house, and she was a big movie fan and a big Star Trek fan, and I was looking at her shelf with all of her VHS tapes, and she had the first five Star Trek movies up on the shelf. So I asked her, I'm like, hey, is it okay if I borrow Star Trek the Motion Picture? And she's like, yeah, just take them all. So I'm like, great, all right, let's do this. So after Christmas dinner and everything, I went home and I put in Star Trek the Motion Picture. I was all excited, and it was really, really boring. So I'm like, okay, enough of Star Trek. That was interesting. Now I know why people like Star Wars better, and time to move on with my life. And a couple days later, my friend Matt came over just to hang out. And he sees the five tapes sitting next to the TV, and he's like, oh man, you've got all the Star Trek movies? That's amazing. And I'm like, yeah, well, I watched, you know, the first one, and it was really bad, so I'm just going to give them all back to my aunt and pretend it never happened. And he's like, no, that first one is really bad, but 2, 3, and 4 are amazing. We should totally watch these, like, right now. And I'm like, fine, all right, let's do this, you know? So we put in Wrath of Khan, and I was hooked. You know, we watched all three that night. Next morning, we watched number 5. Then that night on WPWR Power 50 in Chicago, they showed The Hunted from Next Generation. And a few days later, on Sunday night at 11:30 p.m., they showed Galileo 7. And that was my first exposure to the original series. And luckily, it was a really good episode. And I've been hooked ever since.
Can you imagine being a kid growing up today? Like, I'm going to get into Star Trek. Here's every episode ever.
I know, I've thought about that a lot with everything, movies, you know, Star Trek, everything, and I think it kind of in some ways would have spoiled me. Like, I would have loved that because I was always wanting, you know, I'm like one of these obsessive people who wants to see everything in order. Like, I desperately wanted to see all of Star Trek in chronological order. But of course, you had to, you know, take whatever you could get. And if I had that option now, I really don't know what, I mean, I don't know what it would be like. You know, I don't think I would appreciate it as much as I do now, even though it would have been way better, you know?
Yeah, I think that you having to, like, hunt for it made it more, because it wasn't just handed to you. Maybe it was more appealing because you had to hunt for it. And, like, this is the episode that we're watching today. And you can't just be like, oh, we'll just skip to the next one. You know, you had to watch it or record it on your VHS and watch it later. Fast forward through the commercials.
And then also you had to savor that one episode, Whereas, you know, I could see myself burning through an entire series. And, you know, while I would have seen much more of the series in terms of volume, I wouldn't have dissected any single episode and come to appreciate that little gem inside the overall whole. You know, I probably wouldn't have seen Trouble with Tribbles, you know, 100 times or anything like that, but I would have seen all of them right away. And I think I probably wouldn't be as interested in the show on the whole as I am now if that were the case. What about you? How did you get involved in Star Trek?
Well, I too grew up with Star Wars and Star Trek. My mom was very Star Warsy. I have a nice collection of figures, mostly hers, sitting next to me here in the studio. But my dad was the one who was really into Star Trek. So I grew up with my dad had the Making of Star Trek book, the one that came out in 68. I'm rereading it right now. It's really good. But I didn't read it back then. I just looked at all the cool pictures of, like, the aging makeup from Deadly Years and the scales of the Klingon ship versus the Enterprise and all the cool stuff, just the pictures that were in there. And my dad had Shatner's... My dad's not a big reader, but he had Shatner's Star Trek Memories books. And so he ended up giving them to me. I've read them several times. I love them so much. Some of the times that I remember when I was little that we spent together, it was making model kits. He had like the Enterprise bridge, the TOS bridge, and it had like each little thing and explained, you know, this is the engineering section and stuff. And that's where I learned that. My dad's really funny. He bought a Pontiac Transport. I was talking to him the other day saying that that I was going to do this podcast and that my story really is his story. He's like, are you going to tell him about the Pontiac Transport? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, Dad, I am. But he bought a Pontiac Transport because it looks like a shuttlecraft. And we used to be driving down the highway and we'd push the hazard lights to raise the shields and to fire the photon torpedoes at the people who were going slow in the fast lane. That see, there was never any hope for me. I was ruined from day one. But to the show, my dad had some reruns on VHS, and you know the major episodes, Trouble with Tribbles and Arena, I think. But he also had all the movies, except for one, because he thinks it's the most boring thing ever. We're going to have a talk about the motion picture. I feel like we're giving it too much crap here in the first episode.
Well, I mean, that's the, you know, that was 12-year-old me thinking that it was terrible. But, you know, I've since, you know, grown older and wiser and appreciate it a lot more now. So
it's growing on me. I need to watch it again with some select commentaries, perhaps. So I grew up watching Star Trek's 2 through 5, four mostly, constantly. And, you know, I didn't understand half the things, double dumbass on you. But, like, I'm, like, 5 years old quoting, like, remember where we parked? And I remember in elementary school, we had a computer class. And one of my friends and I would redo the Scotty talking to the computer scene from Star Trek 4. Every class, we'd just be like, hello, computer. And he'd hand me the mouse. Hello, computer, I'd say into the mouse. And then he'd say, just use the keyboard. I'd say, the keyboard, how quaint. And I'd crack my little knuckles and start banging on the keyboard really hard. I mean, that was elementary school. There was, oh, I'm glad I had friends like that growing up.
Yeah, I did not have that. You know, there was no one really who I could watch Star Trek with except for my one friend, Matt. You know, so whenever I would go to school, if I was brave enough to wear like a Star Trek t-shirt or something, you know, they were like, Star Trek, you nerd, you know, and that's what I dealt with, you know. And when I found out, you know, about other people at the school who were fans, I'm like, where were you guys? You know, after the fact, I'm like, what's going on? How come I was the biggest Star Trek fan. How come you didn't come hang out with me? Oh, well, what can you do?
One of my earliest theater memories, in fact, I can't think of any movie theater memory before this, but I remember being in the movie theater with my dad, wondering why McCoy had to pull his dad off of life support. And I'm like, thinking about that now, I had to have been 5 years old. Because movie came out in 1989, right?
Yeah, 89, yeah.
Yeah, so I had to have been 5, maybe 6. And Dad, I mean, he took me to see Star Trek. On my own in college, I went to see Insurrection and Nemesis with some nerd friends of mine that I had made. So I've seen a few of the shows and the movies in theaters. I've not watched many of the shows live, though. Maybe a handful of episodes, Trials and Tribulations. We actually watched Broken Bow, like, as a, not as a dorm, but in the dorm, a few of us got together. We're like, there's a new Star Trek series, and we're going to watch it. And then we didn't, I don't think we watched another episode, or at least not together. I watched a few episodes of Enterprise, and my dad would tape episodes of Voyager for me to save, like, the pilot. So he's got the pilot episode. It's been out for like a month or something. And I finally get to go see my dad. And he's like, okay, here, this is Voyager. It's really cool. It's a really cool first episode. But don't get too attached to the first officer or the doctor, because they're totally going to die. It's like, God, Dad, why did you tell me that? I'm going to find out in a few minutes. Actually, I think he told me on the phone. He's like, I taped the first episode of Voyager for you. Really? Yeah. But you shouldn't get it too attached. I'm like, you told me this like weeks before I watched it.
But that's how it was back then. Like, I've been reading all of these old Cinescape magazines from the time period because they're the best. It's like the internet back before there was an internet. Everyone knew like a year out that Captain Kirk was going to die and the Enterprise was going to blow up in generations. Spoilers. I know this is an original series podcast and a lot of our listeners probably haven't branched out into Next Generation, but you know, everyone knew. I knew, you know, and I did not care. I did not think, I mean, I remember like as a 14-year-old, my goal in life for that year was to find out as much as I could about that movie before going to see it. Whereas now I would stay away from that, like, don't ruin. And I'd be like really mad if someone told me. It was a different time, you know?
Yeah.
Cut your dad some slack, man. Jeez.
Okay. All right. I did watch most of the original series remastered live. I was really excited about it because I knew that it was a culturally significant show. And I wanted to make sure that it was presented correctly. I'm a big Star Wars fan, but I'm not such a big fan of what the special editions became. It went from a restoration to almost a reboot to make it fit in line with movies that didn't exist yet. And so I was afraid of that happening with Star Trek, but I find most of the changes very tasteful, very well done. And I bought all the Blu-rays when they came out, mostly because they have the original versions on there too. And I want to preserve that kind of thing. And once I watched through the whole thing once with all the new effects, now when I'm rewatching them, I'm watching with the original effects to get in that mindset of being there in the 60s, which is something that hopefully we're going to be able to replicate for you, the listener.
Yeah, for me, remastered, I remember when it happened, and actually I was at a convention in Chicago right before the first episode aired, and Dave Rossi, who was sort of heading up the effort, was there at the convention, and I went into it thinking, this is wrong, you know, I do not approve of them changing these effects and everything, and I was, and they said, you know, like, Dave Rossi is going to be here to discuss it, and I, like, circled that in my program, like, I am going to this panel, and I am
going to give him a piece of your mind.
I'm going to give him a piece of my mind, and I go and I sit in the back of the theater, and there's a bunch of people who are sitting, like, a couple rows in front of me talking to this dude, and they're, like, riveted, you know, all of their attention is on this dude. And I'm like, who are they talking to? What are they talking about? And I start, as my wife would say, ear hustling. And I realize that it's Dave Rossi who's talking to them, you know? And they're like asking him all these questions and he's, you know, talking. I mean, very, very super nice guy. I went up to him. I started talking to him. We had like a one-on-one conversation for like a good long time. He told me he was going to make the Gorn blink. And I'm like... I'm like, man, I really want to hate you, but I can't because you seem like such a nice guy. And, you know, what you're doing, what you're saying, it sounds like you really care about this. I'm still opposed to it on a conceptual level, but at least I know it's in good hands, you know? And, you know, I did watch the first episode, and I've seen a few since then. I actually watched one today, and... it is interesting, like the stuff that they were doing and sort of like the restrictions that they placed on themselves in terms of like not changing the running time and things like that. It is interesting. I'm opposed to changes being made to movies or TV shows without the creator's input. And since, you know, the guys who made that show are, you know, a lot of them aren't around anymore, you know, I don't think that it's a good idea to to do that. But since it's been done, I'm glad that it's at least done by people, you know, like Rossi and the Okudas, who, you know what they're doing and definitely care about preserving it. And the one thing which did really sell me on it was, you know, he was like, "No, you guys are going to say, you know, what about the originals?" And he's like, "Well, you still have the originals. You have the DVDs right there." And I was thinking to myself, and this was years before the Blu-ray came out, I'm like, "Yeah, but are they going to be on the Blu-ray?" "No, they're not going to be on the Blu-ray. You know this, and I know this, and I want to be able to watch the originals in HD." And then they come out, and sure enough, the originals are on the Blu-ray, and so are the soundtracks, which never were on the DVD. And I mean, they really did right by that show with that Blu-ray set, you know, giving you the option and everything. It's really fantastic. So
now the question remains, why TOS? Why do you think that this show deserved to be, I mean, like, it was 45 years old, like, you know, it was like 40 at the time that the remastered effort was. What do you think gives it its lasting quality? I mean, it was canceled twice. Three times, and only one of them stuck. Like, what about it? Why are we still talking about it and not Gunsmoke, which was on for 20 years? Why are we having a Star Trek podcast on a Star Trek network? I mean, what do you think? What do you think is its lasting quality?
The thing about the original series, I mean, part of it, I think, is just sort of the genre that it's in. You know, science fiction fans tend to be a bit more obsessive than anyone else in the world. So, you know, the idea of there not being a Gunsmoke network or a Law and Order network doesn't really surprise me. You know, the idea of there being a Star Trek network is not that surprising to me. You know, I think that if you look back at the show, it's just flat out really, really, really well done. I mean, if you compare it to, let's say, other science fiction from the time, like Lost in Space or something like that, it's obviously, you know, much better written and produced. I mean, like, some of the stuff that they were doing from a photographic standpoint is way ahead of its time. And, you know, you had some of the best science fiction writers in the world, you know, writing scripts for these guys. I mean, say what you want about William Shatner, but, you know, he's the best actor ever. You know, and Leonard Nimoy is no slouch either. So, I mean, you had all of these guys and they were, you know, taking this super seriously and turning out high quality products on a weekly basis. And in terms of why now, why it's still around today, because you could say that Twilight Zone was doing the same thing, and it totally was. You know, Twilight Zone is, I think, in many ways equal, in some ways superior to the original series. And if you're asking why there's, you know, a Star Trek network now but not a Twilight Zone network, I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that Star Trek has, for the most part, never really gone away. You know, we've had the Next Generation, we've had, you know, the JJ movies and everything, and it's always sort of front and center in pop culture. And because it has never gone away, even if, you know, the main focus is on, you know, Deep Space Nine, well, the main focus was never on Deep Space Nine, but even if the main focus is on Voyager or something like that, there's always still Star Trek in that title. And, you know, that keeps the original series in the public consciousness. And I think that's a really big part of its continued success or continued following.
I agree completely. I think that yeah, compared to other shows, especially other science fiction shows at the time, it's very progressive. I mean, that's something that Roddenberry really, really wanted, was to show the future where humankind has put aside all their differences and now they judge all the aliens who are doing everything wrong.
He was working there. You know, he had, his intentions were good. You know, it would take him a couple decades to work out the kinks, but his intentions were good.
Yeah, sure. But, like, he was really progressive. I mean, you don't think about it, but he had a black woman serving on the bridge, and no one made a point, well, except for Abraham Lincoln, oddly enough, no one made a point that she was black. And he had a Russian person join the crew in the second season, because he acknowledged that even though the Russians were our enemies during the Cold War, that they did a lot for space exploration, so it would make sense that one of the main bridge crew be Russian. And that's really neat, and that's something that I'm sure no other 60s show had a good guy Russian, or at least, you know, one who wasn't a double agent spy or something. So to have that kind of progression, I think progressiveness in a show in the 60s, I think is a big deal. And I think part of it is something I always struggled with TOS until just recently was the lack of continuity. Sometimes, like, my wife was watching an episode with me the other day, and she's like, well, why isn't Spock just mind-meld with the guy? Because I'm like, because that doesn't exist yet. It's not something they'd thought of yet. Or it doesn't do that in this particular episode. It's, you know, because sometimes he could do it through a wall. Sometimes he does it to a probe. Just there's little continuity. And I think that it was Dave Rossi, I think, on one of the other Trek FM shows, who said that it's really an anthology show with standing sets.
It goes back a lot further than that. It goes back to, as far as I can tell, Roddenberry's original pitch. Right here, I've been reading Mark Cushman's These Are the Voyages, which is all about the making of the original series. And right here in Roddenberry's original pitch to the studio, he says, "And while maintaining a familiar central location and regular cast, explores an anthology-like range of exciting human experience." So that was definitely built into the show. That was definitely Roddenberry's intent from the very beginning. And that is, I agree with you, one of the things which makes it so cool.
Yeah, I've held one of those, like at a Xerox copy of the original pitch, because Jerry Taylor went to IU.
Oh, wow.
Which is nearby, and she donated a bunch of Voyager stuff and some TOS stuff to the university library. But I went in and I was just like, bring me your Star Trek stuff. And so they gave me like big boxes. I wasn't allowed to have my phone. And one of the things, as I was digging through, it was like every Voyager script, and then there was a little TOS section. I need to go back. But one of the things was the original pitch. I don't know if it was the original pitch, but it looked like an old piece of paper, like typewriter, and just, it was incredible. All about April and, you know, how, we'll totally save money by, you know, every society is just like Earth, and we'll have random episodes where people are gangsters or whatever's on the back lot that day. And, you know, everybody will be mostly human, and so we'll save money on makeup effects and stuff. And
yeah.
It was all there from the beginning, and that may have been what gave it its lasting qualities and why NBC kept un-canceling it, because it was, even though it was super expensive, I think that they were making their money back.
Yeah, I think, you know, they also saw, you know, sooner or later they saw the light at the end of the tunnel, which was syndication, and that they would make all of their money back then. But yeah, I mean, Roddenberry was a smart guy. He had things thought out pretty thoroughly when he was starting up this show, and it shows when you watch it.
I like how it progresses as the franchise goes on. You can see all of the different ways that they've taken the standing set anthology, different stories, cheap makeup idea to continue to tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, you know, Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or Voyager or Enterprise or even the JJ movies. Even though the JJ movies aren't cheap, they're still all trying to tell the same basic story of humanity overcoming what's holding them back.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's see. Let's talk about our favorite episodes. My favorite episode is iMud. I know it's an odd episode to pick as your favorite, but it is always entertaining to me. I've always loved, it must have been one of the episodes my dad had on tape, because I always loved Harry Mudd, and I'd never really seen Mudd's women, so I'm guessing that was just iMudd. I love Harry Mudd, I love Stella, I love all the androids, and it's just, it's goofy. I know that I shouldn't open the show talking about one of the cheesiest episodes of the series, but at least it's deliberately cheesy, and there's always room for cheese.
There's nothing wrong with cheese. There really isn't. And it's part of the show. And I think a lot of people sort of miss the humor in the show at times. You know, they laugh at it. I mean, but it is a really funny show a lot of the time, you know. There's nothing wrong with that. As part of the anthology thing, you know, you can do a horror episode like, you know, Wolf in the Fold or whatever, and then you can do a comedy episode like Trouble with Tribbles. And, you know, I mean, it's cool like that. It's very malleable.
Yeah. And that's something that they continue to do to this day. And in the different series. They know that you can mix the humor and the drama. And it was a lot better when there were shows that we could have a humorous episode and not just humorous parts of a serious discussion. And that's probably one of the reasons why so many people say Star Trek is meant to be on TV. And it's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
My other favorite episode is the opposite of iMUD, and that's City on the Edge of Forever, which I'm sure is a lot of people's favorite episodes. But it touches me to this day, even though I've seen it a whole bunch of times. Or I can read the photo comic thing that I have on the shelf there, and it will still make me tear up. Just the emotion of Kirk falling in love and having to sacrifice someone else it's deep. It's really deep and really surprising if you're going from like iMUD to City on the Edge of Forever. It's like, oh, okay, this goofy 60s show. I mean, barely any of it takes place on the Enterprise. It's all in Mayberry, literally. They walk past Floyd's barbershop. And it's just so good and so dramatic. And it just ends. I love that it just ends. There's no let's make fun of Spock or explain to McCoy what really happened. Just let's get the hell out of here. And then it's just gone. It's just over. And I'm like, that should have been one of the first episodes.
Yeah, and yet I think that, you know, having a season to get to know these characters really also does kind of help to add weight to the impact of that show, which I agree that one is one of the best. So as far as my favorite episodes are concerned, I guess this is actually kind of a two-part answer for me. When I think about what the best episode of the show is, critically speaking, I have to say that it's The Trouble with Tribbles. In addition to being really funny and everything, and that being the hook that, you know, certainly got me into that episode, got me to love that episode as a kid, when you kind of take a look at it now as an adult, you can see that there is a lot of other stuff going on beneath the surface. It's not simply this comical story with these cute little, you know, furry animals. There's actually a lot of political intrigue and stuff going on in it, which is quite interesting. And they're just using a humorous story in order to get this deeper message across. Not that it's an extremely deep episode or anything like that, but it is definitely... It's got some good stuff going on there, you know. But in terms of my favorite episode, I really have to go with Arena, because I just love it for everything that it is. For me, in a lot of ways, it is the quintessential original series episode. You've got a kind of a space battle. You've got a planet battle. You've got an amazing alien. I mean, I really do think that it's great. And you also do get to see this sort of, you know, cheesy production value, you know, if you want to call it that. And yet it never takes me out of the episode. If anything, it just draws me in, you know, more. I have always loved Arena, and I always will love Arena. And yeah, that's got to be my favorite, at least subjectively.
Yeah, it also shows, like, it's not just Kirk beats up the alien. I mean, he has to solve a riddle, and, you know, so it shows that Kirk isn't just this, you know, brawny, stupid guy. He knows how gunpowder is made, even though they haven't used it for hundreds of years, I'm sure. And that he shows mercy. I mean, the moral of the story is to show that the humanity is awesome, because we show mercy even to those people who are trying to eat us.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other cool stuff in there too, like the fact that the Gorn does outsmart Kirk for the first half of the episode. You know, Kirk thinks he's being all cool by narrating his tale, because I guess that's what you do when you're a Starfleet captain. But, you know, in reality, he's telling the Gorn everything that he's doing, and the Gorn is just sitting back, you know, listening, waiting. And it really is sort of like a chess game between these two, you know, super intelligent captains. And then, you know, you get to the end, and it you know, really does, like you're saying, you know, have quite the moral message behind it. It's great. It's a really great episode.
Yeah, I could see that being a very good representation of the original series.
It's even got the, you know, omnipotent godlike being thing.
No, that's true. The you know, omnipotent godlike being that says maybe we'll be friends in a few hundred years and then disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And add that to the list.
And the Vasquez rocks. It's got everything.
Well, let's talk some about what else we're going to talk about as we continue on. So we're hoping to have, maybe we'll have some guests on, but most of the time it'll probably be just us, and we'll be talking maybe some random episodes, maybe we'll talk some characters, like just discuss Kirk or Spock throughout the years and the ages and the alternate universes or anything that may come up. Maybe we'll talk about the movies. Maybe we'll do commentary, since you're kind of good at that.
I don't know about that, but yeah. You know, we could talk about the people who were involved with the making of the show, you know, and look at what they've done in the series. We can talk about the various motifs which are present in the show, you know, things which occur again and again, like Kirk talking computers to death. Things
my
like
favorite
that. Yeah, yeah.
We could talk about how Kirk has no problem ruining people's societies and then just saying, oh, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I like your idea of there being another ship following the Enterprise around.
Yes, the cleanup ship. After Kirk destroys a civilization, they come in and say, sorry, here, you know, we'll fix your stuff for you. Ambassadors and stuff.
That's what the next TV show is going to be about, by the way. Actually, you could do a video game with that. Make it like kind of like a Sim City kind of thing.
Just rebuild have like the society that Kirk destroyed.
Yeah, each level takes place after an episode of the. That would be good. I would play that game.
It'd be good for fan film, which we could also talk about the fan films for TOS, because there's a bunch of them. That would be really fun and give some new content maybe that people haven't heard or seen before.
Sure, the animated series is out there.
Yeah. We could talk about that.
Talk about that, yeah.
I could watch that, and then we could talk about it.
you can watch the one good episode, and we can talk about that.
Maybe that's what we'll do.
Yesteryear, yeah. Yeah. There's no shortage of topics to discuss on this show.
No, there really isn't.
Yeah, so should be fun.
Well, it should be. And it's been really fun introducing ourselves today. But this is just the newest show on Trek FM. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Looking for Parlock in all the wrong places.
Well, and you also get the feeling here that she's only... Worf really is only being rejected because she's not interested. It has nothing to do with whether or not Worf is Klingon enough or any of that. She's just not interested. She's interested in Quark.
Earl Grey.
Romulans on TNG.
You know, it's this TV trope of an actor playing their own descendant or, you know, it doesn't make sense. Okay, fine. If you want to...
Right, because Data never plays his grandfather or great-grandfather or own descendant, but, you know, it, that's a terrible storyline.
Or Michael Dorn.
The Ready Room.
Home.
Well, I think after what he went through with the Zindi, you know, you see he's become very jaded. He's very cynical about things, and it would be easy for him to stay in that place, and it would continue to grow, and he would become nothing like the person he was, and even lose sight of the person that he was and never be able to get back there.
To the journey!
Voyager's funniest moments.
They're seeing Sandrines for the first time, and you see that pool shark guy who is such a chauvinist pig jerk. Who says something to the effect, to B'Elanna, something like, treat a lady like a tramp, and a tramp like a lady. It works every time. And she says, Paris, did you program this guy? And he's like, yeah, why? She said, he's a pig, and so are you.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Battlestar Galactica.
But with the new series, it really tried to delve much deeper into the social commentary. You know, in a lot of ways, I think it was an excellent portrayal of a post-9/11 world. And I think it touched on a lot of aspects of our society.
Warp 5.
Hoshisato.
I'm not so sure that I can relate to the background as providing an explanation for her personal insecurities. I perhaps wondered if a part of that, I mean, you put her on Earth in her element, doing her teaching, working with languages in that safe environment. I don't think she would have the same level of insecurity.
Trek News and Views.
Barge of the Dead.
So you actually get a character episode that doesn't just explore B'Elanna, but explores the Klingon mythos at the same time. I mean, that was two for one.
Literary Treks.
David R. George III, Revelation and Dust.
And it feels like an evolution for Starfleet as well in the way that they built a starbase.
Well, I'm glad that came across because that was sort of one of the things that I was going for. You wanted it to be an evolution in Starfleet's construction of starbases. Mm-hmm. It should be something brand new. And because it's an important station, because it's in an important location, it really needed to be, I thought, a grand station.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new shows for you every day, and you'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit Trek.fm/PD for podcast directly to get all the links. Well, thanks for talking with me today, Mike. So where can people find you when we're not in orbit?
Well, you can find my other Trek.fm show. Called Commentary Trek Stars, which I do with my co-host Max, where we talk about the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. And you can also find me on my website, CommentaryTrackStars.com, where I do Commentary Trek Stars Off Topic with Max and our friend Brandon, where we talk about random movie things and stuff like that, basically whatever we want to. And we have lots of commentaries for lots of Star Trek movies and TV shows on there as well. And Drew's on there too, so you can check us out.
What was the final tally of movies that you commentated?
Well, we did 182 episodes, but I think it came out to like 179 movies or something like that.
That's awesome. Yeah. So if you can think of a movie, they'll talk over it for you.
There you go. You can also find me on Twitter at ComTrackStars or email me at ComTrackStars@gmail.com.
You can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. If you want to share your thoughts on today's show, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to show, and then choose Standard Orbit. That will come to both of us by email. You can also choose the tab on the right-hand side of the page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Before we go, we'd like to remind everyone to support our sponsor for today's show. Squarespace is the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, online store, or anything else you can imagine. Create your own space today. Just go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial. No credit card required. And then use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. You're going to love it, and we really thank Squarespace for their support of Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And if you would personally like to support Standard Orbit, the network, and all our programming, visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 alien-themed badges and art prints, so thank you for your contribution. And you can mix and match badges and art prints. There are different levels of donation to choose from, and your contributions help us cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring Standard Orbit and other shows to you every week. So thanks everyone for listening. Have a great week, and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.